Okay, let us recite, pay our homage to the Buddha first by reciting Namo Tassa three times.
Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa.
Before I start, can I have a sheet of the handout? Can I have one copy of the handout? Okay, so today's topic is inner exploration. This topic come from Samyutta Nikaya 66. So Buddha give this talk in Kuru country. Kuru country people are highly intelligent, like Singaporean. So many talks, many profound talks are given in Kuru. For example, the four foundations of mindfulness. We have learned many times the four foundations of mindfulness are given in Kuru people. And also another profound Sutta, Maggandeya Sutta, is also given to Kuru people. And today's talk, inner exploration, is also given at Kuru town, to Kuru people, but this time given to monks. Okay, so Buddha asked a group of monks, do you engage in inward exploration? Bhikkhus. And the bhikkhus answer, yes. Then Buddha asked again, how? How do you engage in inward exploration? Bhikkhus. And many monks give the answer. One after another give the answer, but Buddha never satisfied. So at this time, Ananda know. So Ananda asked the Buddha and invite Buddha to give the talk. He said, now is the time for Bhagawa, for the Buddha to give the answer, and we as a disciple will listen respectfully and remember it. Okay. So Buddha start. Here, bhikkhus, when engaged in inward exploration, a bhikkhu explores thus the many diverse kinds of suffering that arise in the world, hindered by aging and death. What is the source of this suffering? What is its origin? From what is it born and produced? So let us see the many diverse kinds of suffering first. In the teaching of the Buddha, when we talk about the suffering, dukkha, usually we mention three types of suffering. What are the three types? Dukkha, viparinama dukkha, and sankhara dukkha. Okay, what is dukkha? Dukkha is suffering. So when we talk about dukkha, it refers to bodily suffering. As long as we have this body, we have this bodily or physical suffering. And this will it will become clear during meditation, especially for those who have not enough meditation experience. So when you start your meditation, after 20 minutes, 30 minutes, you feel pain. Some people, after 10 minutes, they start to feel pain here and there. So the move, they shift the posture, and another 10 minutes, shoulder pains. Then they change again. Another 10 minutes, feet, they feel pain on the feet, or on the buttock, or on the thigh, or on the neck. So the pain, no matter how many times they change posture, the pain comes one after another. Then he gets fed up. Why not I do standing meditation? So after standing for 30 minutes, all the pressure go down to the feet, he also feel uncomfortable again. Then why not I walk? So he walk. After walk for 45 minutes, he feels so tired. Then why not I lie on the bed? After lying on the bed, then he feel asleep. So, feel asleep, you cannot feel the pain already, right? But if you don't feel asleep, lying long time on the bed also, you feel suffering. You want to get up. For those sick person who stay in the hospital, all the time they're lying on the bed, they also feel so much suffering. They want to stand up. They want to walk. But in our daily life, we cannot feel this dukkha, dukkha, bodily pain so clear. Why is it so? Why in our daily life we don't feel so much pain as during retreat, as in a retreat, meditation retreat? Why? The answer is very easy. Simply because we keep on changing posture in our daily life. The moment you feel uncomfortable, you move. The neck feel uncomfortable, you just shake your neck. But during retreat, you are not allowed to shake your neck. You are not allowed to move here and there and stretch your hand and leg when the time is not finished. So when you keep one posture at a length of time, you will feel the dukkha, dukkha, the physical suffering. So this one type of suffering. Another one, second one is viparinama dukkha. The suffering owing to change. This refers to pleasant feeling. Especially refer to pleasant feeling. For an example, let's say you feel very hungry. When you feel very hungry, then you see food. You went into the restaurant because you are so hungry, so you keep on eating, eating, eating. When you eat the time, you feel pleasant feeling because your hunger is appeased. So you feel so much pleasant feeling, then without control, then you keep on eating, eating until your stomach become bloated. At a time, your pleasant feeling change to unpleasant feeling. This is called the natural disasters. Tsunami, earthquake, and nowadays, terrorist attack, air crash. All this external suffering, also another type. We call diverse suffering. And now the Buddha asks, what is the source of this suffering? What is its origin? From what is it born and produced? Since the teaching of the Buddha is connected with cause and effect, then is suffering the cause or effect? Cause or effect? Can you answer me? Is suffering the cause or effect? Louder? Effect, yes. Suffering is effect. Then what is the cause for this suffering? This is the important question. We call inner exploration. If you want to go inside, go inwardly, explore it, and this is the one. This is the question that you should ask yourself. And the Buddha answered himself, the many diverse kinds of suffering that arise in the world, hindered by aging and death, has acquisition. Upadi. Pali, we call upadi. Has acquisition as its source, as its origin, and is born and produced from acquisition. What is this acquisition, upadi? Commentary explained as aggregate. Acquisition as aggregates. What are the aggregates? Five. Form aggregate, rupa khanda, feeling aggregate, vedana khanda. Perception aggregate, sanya khanda. Formation, volitional formation aggregate, sankhara khanda. And the last one, consciousness aggregate, vijnana khanda. And this five khanda is ultimate truth. But conventionally, we say the coming of this five aggregate is called birth. Birth jati. And because of this five aggregate, and this five aggregate, or conventionally we call birth or a person or being. And when there is birth, inevitably there is aging. Inevitably there is dukkha, bodily suffering. Inevitably there is sankhara, there is viparinama dukkha, the suffering owing to change. And inevitably there is sankhara dukkha, suffering as conditional state, because the body undergo aging, sickness, and death. And this is the normal truth of suffering, the first normal truth. All the teaching of the Buddha must go into four noble truths. Venerable Sariputta gives us a discourse, the simile of elephant's foot. Then he said that the foot plant of elephant is the greatest in the world. All the foot plant of other animals can go into footprint of elephant. Similarly, the four noble truths is the greatest teaching of Buddha. All Dhamma must go into four noble truths. So acquisition as aggregate, having this aggregate or having birth, is noble truth of suffering. Okay. Now, since we accept, we recognize having this body, having this mind, having this aggregate is the truth of suffering, then what is the source of this acquisition? This is called inner exploration. You explore your insight one after another. It's called inner exploration. So what is the source of this acquisition? What is its origin? From what is it born and produced? What's your answer? Okay. Acquisition has craving as its source. Craving as its origin, is born and produced from craving. When there is craving, acquisition comes to be. When there's no craving, acquisition does not come to be. Okay. When we talk about a craving, which is the second noble truth, the truth of the origin of suffering, then we must not forget three types of craving, tanha. What are the three types of craving? Since we suffer now, then why we suffer? Why we come to beings? Why we come to birth? Why we have these five aggregates? Then we must know the origin, the cause of our suffering. Only then we can tackle it. We only know we are suffering, but we do not know what are the cause, what are the causes, what are the origin. Then how are we going to remove our suffering? Without tackling the origin of suffering, the suffering is an effect, cannot be removed, cannot disappear. Therefore, as a smart practitioner, we must know what causes us suffer. And as a smart practitioner, we must tackle the cause. Don't tackle the effect. So in order to tackle the cause, in order to remove the cause, to kick out the cause, we must understand them well. Chinese saying, 知己知彼，百战百胜. So you must fully understand craving, only then you know how to deal with them skillfully. You know how to defeat them. So what are the three types of craving? Number one is kamma tanha, craving for sensual pleasures. When we talk about the sensual pleasures, how you enjoy your sensual pleasures? From your own experience, how you enjoy your sensual pleasures? Through what? You do not enjoy your sensual pleasures. We enjoy so much until we forget how we enjoy it. We enjoy sensual pleasures through our eyes. The eyes want to see beautiful things. So when you see beautiful things, you feel pleasant. So at this moment, you are enjoying sensual pleasures. Similarly, our ears want to hear pleasant things, music, sweet voice, or female's voice, or male's voice, and so on. That makes you happy. Okay? And also, our nose enjoys fragrance. Our tongue enjoys flavor. Our body enjoys so much touch, soft touch, the touch from beloved one, and so on. And our mind think of all fantasy. You can think whatever you want. You can think, today I will become Obama. Nobody can control you. You can think whatever you want and make yourself happy. You don't have a car, you can imagine now I'm driving Mercedes, and so on. Right? So you enjoy your own fantasy, your dreams, daydreams. Okay? So this is called kamma tanha, enjoying, craving for sensual pleasures. And from this craving for sensual pleasures, then it extends to another craving called craving for existence, bhava tanha, craving for existence. Without existence, without five aggregates, without body and mind, how are you going to enjoy? Right? Banana stem cannot enjoy, no mind. So without aggregates, without mind and body, you cannot enjoy sensual pleasures. Therefore, in order to enjoy sensual pleasures, you crave for another thing that is existent. There is five aggregates. There is birth. There is new life, another life, so that you can enjoy all sensual pleasures. This is called bhava tanha. But for other beings, some beings, they do not enjoy sensual pleasures. Still, they crave for existence, for mind. This is for Brahma, Brahma beings. Brahma, the beings who stay in the Brahma world, they don't have the body, especially Arupa Brahma, immaterial world. They don't have the body. But they still enjoy jhana bliss. Because jhana is so peaceful, so blissful, so they enjoy having mind. So the mind can enjoy the peace of concentration, the peace of jhana state. Okay, so the crave for existence. This is the second type of craving. The third type is craving for non-existence. Craving for non-existence is not dipana. Craving for non-existence, vibhava tanha, is associated with wrong view of annihilation, ujjata ditti. So this person holding the wrong view of annihilation, he thinks after that nothing exists. Therefore, he craves for non-existence, but is accompanied with wrong view. And the first one, craving for sensual pleasures and craving for existence, is accompanied by another wrong view of eternalism. Eternalism, because you think it's the same person, it's the same soul that can enjoy, they will enjoy the sensual pleasures again. For example, this life, you enjoy sensual pleasures and you become so attached to the sensual pleasures, then you pray, next life, I will get a human body again so that I can continue enjoying same sensual pleasures. So you think it's the same person, same soul that transmigrate from one life to another life. This is called sasata ditti, the wrong view of eternalism. Okay? So these are the three types of craving. And because of this craving, we come into existence. And because of this craving to enjoy, then we long for existence. When you have existence, you have the body and mind. When you have the body and mind, you have aging, sickness, and death. No birth, no aging, no death, right? When there's birth, there's aging and death. Nobody can escape from such law. It's a universal law. Even Buddha cannot escape from death. Okay? Therefore, this craving is the truth of the origin of suffering, the second noble truth, samudaya satya. Okay. Now comes another important question. Very important question. When this craving arises, where does it arise? Since craving is the origin of all suffering, we must know when this craving arises. Where? When and where does it arise? When it settles down, upon what does it settle? So as he explores inwardly, then he understands thus, whatever in the world has a pleasant and agreeable nature, it is here that this craving arises. When it arises, it's here that it settles when it settles down. So whatever in the world has a pleasant and agreeable nature, that craving arises. So what in a world that has pleasant and agreeable nature? Now another question. Just now the question is when, where the craving arises. Now we know whatever in the world has a pleasant and agreeable nature, craving arises. So what are the things? What are the things that have pleasant and agreeable nature that cause craving to arise? Do you get it? Do you get the question? Okay. So what's the answer? Don't forget the title, Inner Exploration. So it must be in your body. The eyes, the nose, the ears, the nose, the tongue, the body, and the mind. So when the eye has a pleasant and agreeable nature in the world, it's here that this craving arises when it arises. It's here that it settles when it settles down. We have said we enjoy sensual pleasures. Through what? When the eye sees the object, then you start to enjoy. When the eye sees the pleasant, agreeable object, then you start to enjoy. So the eye is considered pleasant to you, right? And when the ear hears the pleasant music, a pleasant sound that you like, then you start your enjoyment. So the ear appears pleasant to you, agreeable to you. And your nose, when you start to smell something fragrance, then you start to enjoy. Then the nose also appears pleasant and agreeable to you. Similarly, the tongue, the body, and the mind. Therefore, this internal basis, the six internal bases, ear, nose, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind, have pleasant and agreeable nature. And it's here, in the eyes, craving arises. In the ear, craving arises. In the nose, craving arises. Tongue, body, and mind, craving arises. And it also, not only we crave for eye, ear, nose, body, mind, we also crave for what? The object. The eye's object. What is the eye's object? Form. Beautiful form. What is nose object? Ear's object? Sound. What is nose object? Smell, taste, body, tangible, and mental object. So external object also have agreeable and pleasant nature. So the craving also arise and settled on pleasant and agreeable form, sound, fragrance, smell, taste, tangible, and mental object. So six internal object and six external object. When they are pleasant, then the craving arise and settle there. Okay? For example, give an example. During Buddha's time, there was Buddha's half brother called Nanda. Nanda, on the day he's going to marry, then the Buddha appear. Buddha appear in front of him, and give him a bow, his bow. Buddha pass his own bow to Nanda. And Nanda holding the bow, don't know what to do. I'm going to marry, why you give me the bow? So he hold the bow, don't know what to do. And Buddha didn't say anything, just turn and go. So Nanda holding the bowl, don't know what to do, but out of respect for the Buddha, so he followed Buddha. When he followed the Buddha, then saw him following the Buddha. Then she shouted, "Oh my dear, please come back. Please come back, my dear, please come back." But Nanda, out of respect of Buddha, dare not to go back. So follow him to the monastery. Then the Buddha asked him, "Do you want to become monk?" He said, Buddha is something very... He asked a very strange question. "I'm going to marry, and you ask me to become monk." So he said, Buddha asked him, "Do you want to become monk?" And Nanda, astonished, don't know what to answer. But in front of Buddha, out of respect for the Buddha, he said, "Yes, yes." He said, "Yes, yes." So Buddha said, "Okay, ordain now." So immediately, Buddha ordained him to become monk. However, he became monk not out of his own intention, out of fear of Buddha. So he cannot enjoy his monkhood. Every day he remember the sound, "Oh, my dear, come back." Every day he remember, "Oh, my dear, come back, my dear, come back." So as day passed by, he become emaciated. He lose all his weight because he only remember, "Oh, my dear, come back." This is the pleasant, agreeable sound to him. Very pleasant and agreeable sound to him. So the craving arise and settle on that sound. So he cannot be happy to become monk. Okay, so this is an example. How a pleasant and agreeable thing that cause craving to arise to settle down on it. Just an example, okay? Okay, then there comes an important note. Buddha say, "Bhikkhus, whatever ascetics and Brahmins in the past, present and future regarded that in the world with a pleasant and agreeable nature as permanent, as happiness, as self, as healthy, as secure, they nurtured craving." This is such an important note. And it takes me very long time to discover the way of the practice because of this sentence. As we know, the origin of suffering is what? Craving. Then why craving arises? Why craving arises? Because we regard everything as permanent, as happiness, as self, as healthy, as secure. Therefore, we nurtured craving. So in order to remove the craving, then what should we do? What should we do? The answer is there already. Okay. I will give you the answer later on with this. The answer is here. Okay? In nurturing craving, they nurtured acquisition. In nurturing acquisition, they nurtured suffering. In nurturing suffering, they were not free from birth, aging, death. They were not free from sorrow, lamentation, pain, displeasure, and despair. So when you entertain the craving, when you nurture your craving, that's not possible that one can be free from suffering. That's what Buddha said. And where suffering comes from? Come from six sense bases and come from agreeable and pleasant sixth sense bases and agreeable and pleasant sixth sense object. And also because you perceive them, you regard them as permanent. When I contact with the pleasant form, you think, you perceive, you regard them as permanent, permanent, happiness, happiness. That's I enjoying sensual pleasures. Therefore, you nurture craving. Because of your wrong perception, you wrongly regard what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you feel, what you touch as permanent, as happiness, as having a self, as secure. Therefore, craving arises. Then, how not to nurture craving? How not to nurture? How not to let craving arise? Since craving is the origin of all suffering, the answer is so easy. Whatever ascetics and Brahmins regard that in the world with a pleasant and agreeable nature as impermanent, as suffering, as non-self, as a disease, as fearful, as tumor, as cancer, as empty of self, as void, then they will abandon craving. This is what Buddha say, not I say. What I say has no power. What Buddha say is powerful. Okay? So in abandoning craving, they will be free from all suffering. I say, Buddha say. Not I say, Buddha say. Okay? So from this, we must understand the way of practice, especially vipassana. So vipassana is to see five aggregates. Vipassana is to see all the six sense bases, six sense object as impermanent, as suffering, as non-self, as affliction, as insecure, as tumor, cancer, void, empty of self, and so on. Therefore, today we are going to talk about this moment-to-moment practice. As a layperson, we don't have time to sit in meditation all the time, right? So we must learn a skill how to lessen our craving, not to increase more and more. Because as a layperson, our sense bases are open all the time. The moment we wake up, the sense are open to the sense, sense bases are open to the sense object, are open to the impingement of the sense object. At that time, when the object is pleasant, then pleasant feeling arises in you. Then the craving arises. And we spend most of our time moving around, entertain all this craving, then when the suffering will come to the end. When? It seems no hope, right? Therefore, it's very important when you are out of the retreat, you must find a way to contemplate, to lessen our craving. That's called moment-to-moment practice. Okay. So in order to practice, we must have two important factors. Number one is mindfulness. The second one is wisdom. These two are very important in vipassana practice. We call sati sampajana. Sampajana, another meaning is wisdom, clear comprehension. Okay. So as we know, now it becomes clear to us. All the defilements comes at the moment of contact of six sense bases with the six sense object. We also talked this in yesterday. So when there's an impingement, a contact of eye, then pleasant feeling arise, then trigger the craving. So at this moment, in order not to let craving arise and overwhelm us, then we should apply mindfulness. What is mindfulness? Sati, mindfulness. Mindfulness, from here you can see, see the note. Mindfulness comes face to face with each object. Each object means the six sense object: form, sound, smell, taste, tangible and mental object. Okay. And does not forget the object of focus. It stays centered, does not react, and is free from judgment, prejudice, bias, and preference. For example, when I come to contact with the pleasant form, at the moment of contact, then pleasant feeling arises. And the pleasant feeling arises, pleasant feeling, according to dependent origination, pasa pachaya vedana, vedana pachaya tanha. So dependent on contact, feeling, depend on feeling, craving. So at this moment, very fast, when I come to the pleasant object, then pleasant feeling, then craving arises. So as a practitioner, you apply mindfulness. You aware, know, craving has arisen in you. But at this moment, you don't judge. Craving is not good. I shouldn't crave for the pleasant object. You don't judge. You don't, you don't push away or continue crave for the pleasant object. But you stay centered, you do not react to that craving. Although craving arises already, but you let your mind know and stay in the center, don't push it away and don't judge. Why? Then you may ask, is something bad? Craving is something bad, or anger is something very bad. Why should not push it away? Or we transform our mind or use metta to replace the anger. Why should we not do like that? Should we do like that or should not we do like that? Or why should we accept it? Accept the anger, accept the craving. The reason is that because if you push it away, although craving and anger are not good, but if we push it away immediately, then you lose a chance to see its impermanency. As a practitioner, we want to see its arising and passing away. But now, before it passes away, you push it out. Then you lose a chance to see its anicca, impermanency. Therefore, mindfulness does not react. You just recognize the craving has arisen in me, anger has arisen in me, you recognize it and accept it. This is called mindfulness. Okay? So, mindfulness recognizes and accepts. It recognizes what is arising, present, or ceasing in the body and mind at each moment, and accepts it calmly without reaction. For example, when anger is present, know that it's present. When the anger passes, know that it has gone. But to know it passes away is the task of wisdom. Mindfulness just know. Mindfulness cannot penetrate into anicca, only wisdom. Okay? So first, we're mindful of whatever arises. When the eye, the six sense spaces come to contact with six sense object, we're aware of it, using mindfulness to aware of it. But awareness itself is never enough, right? Mindfulness itself is never enough. If mindfulness is enough, Buddha does not need to teach wisdom. Therefore, first we apply mindfulness, but not enough. We need to apply wisdom as well. Okay. So what is the task of wisdom? Huh? Wisdom removes the darkness of ignorance that conceal the three common characteristics: impermanence, suffering, and the impersonal nature of the body and mind. The body and the mind are subject to clinging, which causes suffering. So once this truth is thoroughly known, one will get disenchanted and free oneself from clinging, thereby freeing oneself from suffering as well. So once you apply the wisdom, wisdom know everything, sabbe sankhara anicca, sabbe sankhara dukkha, sabbe dhamma anatta. So wisdom know, when wisdom penetrate into anicca dukkha anatta, then it will remove ignorant. Ignorant cover the nature of things. What is the nature of all formations? What is the nature of all formations? Impermanent, suffering, and non-self. But now we cannot see. Why? Because avijja, ignorance, cover it. So when wisdom arises, it will remove that blindness, that darkness, and the true nature of impermanence, suffering, and non-self will reveal themselves. This is the function of wisdom. Okay? Okay, so the process of observing. Now, let's say whatever refinements, whether craving, anger, conceit, jealousy, competition, and a wrong view, whatever refinements that arise in us, then first we apply, try to be mindful first. First step is to be mindful. Mindfulness has two ingredients. One is to recognize it. Recognize whatever defilements that arise in the mind. Then second, accept it. Accept it as it is. Accept what is just as it is. Do not try to resist, which activates the underlying tendency of anger. And do not cling to it, which activates the underlying tendency of greed. Do not add story to it. When you are mindful of it, when you accept it, you don't add story. If you add story, then it causes restlessness. Okay. So after recognize and accept it, then we can disidentify. Disidentify the craving. Craving is not a self. Right? Anger is not a self. So we try to dispersonalize, disidentify craving by mentally note it. Craving is not a self. Craving is just a mental state. It's not a self, just a mental state. This is how we dispersonalize it. Okay? Then after that, we may ask ourselves, if it's not a self, if craving is not a self, or anger is not a self, then what is it? Investigate. We call Dhamma Vichaya. Dhamma Vichaya is one of the seven factors of enlightenment. We need to investigate. Vipassana is not only seeing impermanent. We also need to investigate. It's one of the factors of enlightenment which I feel is largely ignored nowadays. So as you investigate, okay, why craving is not myself, it's not me, it's not I, then what is it? Why it arises? So if you investigate, then you find trace to the cause. So if you trace to the cause, then you find the cause, then you understand cause and effect. Oh, for example, Give an example, pleasant feeling. When the eyes come to contact with a pleasant form, a beautiful woman, let's say, dependent on contact, pleasant feeling arises. So pleasant feeling arises, activate craving. So you start to disidentify, craving is not myself. Suddenly you remember. You are not carried away by the craving. So suddenly you remember, craving is not I, it's just a mental state. Then, if it's not I, what is that? Why it arises? Then you trace back, because of that beautiful form, beautiful object that come to contact with the eyes. So contact is the cause. The pleasant eye contact is the cause that cause pleasant feeling to arise. So is the pleasant eye contact permanent or impermanent? Permanent or impermanent? If the beautiful woman disappears from your eyes, then no more contact, right? No more eye contact. So contact is impermanent. If the contact is impermanent, how can the feeling, pleasant feeling, permanent? So you see impermanent. And you also understand this pleasant feeling simply an effect of pleasant eye contact. So if you investigate in this way, then you see impermanent, you also see non-self of pleasant feeling. This is called investigation, Dhamma Vichaya. You investigate it. Otherwise, without seeing cause and effect, we will still cherish the idea of ego, the idea of permanent self, a permanent I. Okay. So after you depersonalize and you also investigate already, then you understand there's no I. And you further contemplate impermanent. Impermanent of your craving, of your anger, of your emotion, of your eyes, of the visible object and so on. Why should we contemplate impermanent? The perception of impermanent is very important to attain sotapanna. Without seeing impermanent, it's very difficult to attain liberation. It's called insight of arising and passing away. Although Visuddhimagga mentioned 16 insight knowledges, but in Sutta, Buddha never mentioned 16 insight knowledges. Sometimes you must understand what Buddha mentioned in Sutta and what not mentioned in commentary. 16 insight knowledge is mentioned in commentary, but not mentioned in Sutta. In Sutta, Buddha only mentioned the two important insight knowledges. What are the two? If you are familiar with Sutta, you should be able to answer. Number one is insight of arising and passing away. The gate to liberation. Insight of arising and passing away is the gate to liberation. The second important insight knowledge is insight knowledge of disenchantment. You can read all the Sutta. You will see Buddha keep on repeating this too. Once you see arising and passing away, whatever you see, whether mind and body, you see only arising and passing away, as a result, you will get disenchanted because you cannot control the process of arising and passing away. And you feel it's unsatisfactory. You feel that it's not satisfied at all. And you feel that you cannot control the process of arising and passing away. It's beyond your control. Therefore, it is non-self, not a permanent self. When we talk about self, it means that something you can control. But the process of arising and passing away is beyond one's control. Therefore, it is non-self, anatta. So when you see, first you see arising and passing away, then you see dukkha already. As a result, you also see suffering. As a result, you also see anatta. As you keep on seeing anicca, dukkha, anatta, impermanent suffering and non-self, then you start to develop disenchantment. We call disenchantment. Nibbida jnana. Disgust. The insight of disenchantment towards all formations. You do not delight anymore in what you delight before. Before you delight in your mind and body, now having seen so many times, repeatedly, the arising and passing away of this mind and body, then you become disillusioned. You become disenchanted. You disgust. These are the two important insight knowledges mentioned in Sutta repeatedly. Okay. So, one is the benefit of seeing impermanent is to get disenchanted. Only when you get disenchanted, then you want liberation. Without getting disenchanted towards mind and body, how are you going to liberate yourself from the attachment towards mind and body? Attachment towards mind and body is the origin of suffering. So in order to overcome the origin, you have to let go of that attachment. How to let go? Only by repeatedly seeing its impermanent suffering and non-self, then one start to let go. Okay, so this is one of the benefits when you contemplate impermanent. The second benefit, as Buddha say, let us see again this one. Whatever ascetic and Brahmin in the past, present and future regarded that in the world with a pleasant and agreeable nature as permanent, as happiness, then they nurtured craving. Therefore, we must contemplate impermanent. The moment we contemplate impermanent, then we abandon craving. If we don't contemplate impermanent, our mind will perceive it as permanent, then we nurture craving. Therefore, when you contemplate impermanent, then we abandon craving, which is very important because craving is the origin of all sufferings. Okay? Then another reason why we should contemplate impermanent is to tune the mind in with reality or to harmonize the mind with reality. The truth, the reality in the world is impermanent. Buddha say, sabbe sankhara anicca. This is the truth. No one can deny it. So the truth is impermanent. But our perception is permanent. Our sanya perception always see things as permanent. Then how are we going to harmonize the truth which is impermanent? So in order to harmonize, to tune in, to synchronize with the reality which is impermanent, our perception, we must perceive, must regard things as permanent. Only then these two can come together, can mesh together. So when you perceive, when you regard things as impermanent, and very soon you will see real arising and passing away. If we only think permanent, but sabbe sankhara anicca, all formations are impermanent, but you think permanent, if impermanent appear to you, you also cannot see. Because you only think of permanent. So your mind is not tuned in with reality. Then you cannot see impermanent. You cannot really see impermanent. So By contemplating impermanent, impermanent, you speed up. You speed up your insight to penetrate things and to see clearly as impermanent. This is also one of the important factors. For example, one of my American students, she's a Dharma teacher. One day she came for my retreat in USA. Then she come for interview. She said, "Sister, today my meditation gone. Why?" I said, "Why?" She said, "I do not know. The moment I get up, my mind is full of anger. Full of anger. Anger is one of the five hindrances. So when anger arises, you just cannot meditate." So he said, "Therefore, my meditation gone today." He think, okay. She think. But before she come for my interview, she said that, "But suddenly I remember you share with us, contemplate impermanent. Whatever emotion, craving, anger, jealousy, and so on, just contemplate impermanent." Then she said that, "When you teach me or when you share with me, I don't believe. I don't believe. But now I have no choice. Why not I try?" Because Americans are very open-minded one, right? Why not I try? So she tried, contemplate taking the anger as object. Then she contemplate impermanent, 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 impermanent. She said within a short time, not even 5 to 10 minutes, her anger suddenly disappear, blow with the wind. She was so surprised and so happy. Then she quickly come to me and give me the report. I say, "This impermanent just like magic." Magic. He said that, "I'm going to write many words on the paper, impermanent, impermanent. When I go back home, I'm going to paste everywhere in my home, in my house, just to remind me, don't forget." So from her experience, you see how effective. Otherwise, she will be, her mind will be overwhelmed with anger. There's no way to escape from it. Then she spoiled the whole day. She spoiled the day. But just she apply this, what I share with her, just contemplate impermanent, impermanent. Then she saved herself from the unwholesome mental karma and she saved the day. She has the happy day. So whether this method work or not, you try and see. It's called ihi pasiko. One of the virtues of the Dharma is ihi pasiko. I don't ask you try and believe. I ask you try and see whether it works for you or not. If it works, then continue to try. If it does not work, also try. Maybe you try to a certain period of time, then it starts to work. If you try one time, it does not work. Doesn't mean that it's not effective. Simply because your mindfulness and wisdom is not sharp enough to see it's immediately passing away. Okay? So there's a reason to contemplate impermanent. Okay, then finally, after you contemplate impermanent, then you let it go. Mentally, let it go. And the word of the words of impermanent also teach us to let go. Unconsciously, teach us to let go. Because if it's impermanent, why should I attach? If this emotion is impermanent, why should I attach to it? So the moment you contemplate impermanent, then unconsciously or subconsciously, it also teaches you to let go of it. So this is also one of the benefits by contemplating impermanent. And once you are familiar with this moment-to-moment process, and this moment-to-moment means that you don't have to sit on a cushion when you are moving around. Suddenly, for example, when you're moving around, your eye come to contact with your enemy, so anger arises. As long as you can remember, then contemplate impermanent, impermanent, impermanent. Then another moment, your eyes come to contact with very beautiful woman, then craving arises. As long as you can remember, contemplate impermanent, impermanent, impermanent. Okay? So once you are familiar with this moment-to-moment process, so when you contemplate impermanent, you don't have to sit down. I'm going to sit down and contemplate impermanent, impermanent. No, not necessary. You just stand there and contemplate, or during walking or during exercise. For example, sometimes I do my yoga exercise. So the mind is restless, think of something, the anger arises. I don't have to stop my yoga and contemplate impermanent, impermanent. Not necessary. While doing my yoga, I still can contemplate impermanent, impermanent, and I see the anger disappear. Okay, good. This is called moment to moment. You don't have to sit still to contemplate. Anytime, as long as you remember, you just contemplate your emotions. Now, whatever arises in your mind and body as impermanent. It's so easy to follow. Right? Okay. So once you are familiar with this moment-to-moment process, attend to the five aggregates in different ways, as impermanent, as unsatisfactory, a disease, a cancer, an arrow, painful, an affliction, alien, a dissolution, an emptiness, and not a self. In this way, you can become liberated from clinging and craving. And it's the same question posed by Mahakotita to Venerable Sariputta. Mahakotita asked Venerable Sariputta, how to become Sotapanna? I think this question everybody want to know. The answer everybody want to know. How to become Sotapanna? Once you become Sotapanna, the gate of Appaya, four woeful states, are closed permanently. Although you enjoy sensual pleasures, there's no chance to fall down into four woeful states. But so long we do not attain Sotapanna while enjoying sensual pleasures, be careful. Be careful, okay? So Mahakatita asks, Venerable Sariputta, how to become Sotapanna? Or how to attain to five aggregates so that we can become Sotapan? Then Venerable Sariputta answered, you must attain to five aggregate, or you must contemplate five aggregate as here. What I say here is from what Venerable Sariputta's answer. You must attain the five aggregate as impermanent, as unsatisfactory, a disease, a cancer, an arrow, painful, an affliction, alien, a dissolution, an emptiness, and not a self. You may think, so long. So many words, so long. Then you can summarize it into only three. Anicca, dukkha, anatta. Impermanent, suffering, and non-self. So Venerable Sariputta answered, if you can attain to five aggregates as anicca, dukkha, anatta, soon you will attain Sotapanna. Okay, so this is the inner exploration. First, you ask yourself, why all the suffering come? Why different, diverse suffering comes? Then you find out the answer from what? Craving, right? From craving. Then you ask yourself again, inner exploration, where the suffering settle, or when and where the suffering arise and settle. Then you find the answer, when the craving arise and settle down. Then you find the answer, the craving arises and settle down on pleasant and agreeable object. What are the pleasant and agreeable object? Six sense bases and six sense object. Another word, five aggregates. Same things. Then when we think When we regard this pleasant six sense bases and six sense object or five aggregates as permanent, as happiness, as self, then we nurture craving. Then how not to nurture craving? We must regard them as impermanent, suffering, not self, as a disease, as fearful. Then we abandon craving. In abandoned craving, we will be free from all different types of suffering, Buddha said. And this is called inner exploration. This is the end of my talk. Thank you.
Thank you, Siale Susila, for the enlightening Dharma talk on inner exploration. So there's still some time left. Perhaps we can have some questions from the floor. Are there anyone with any questions for Siale? Can raise your hand. Chlorine, you have questions? No.
When the audience keeps silent, there are two hints. One is so clear, no question. One is don't know what she's talking about. So which one?
Oh yes, there's a question from the second row.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Venerable. Just now you mentioned the last paragraph then. Attend to the five aggregates. Can you give some examples? How do we attend? Say just
attend,
mind and body, yeah.
Attend to five aggregates.
Okay, in different ways, as impermanent and such. A more specific example, like,
Let's say, what I give five aggregate. First, you must understand what are the five. Right? Form. Form aggregate is the body. But body is only conventional truth, right? In ultimate truth, four elements. Or if you don't want to see four elements, okay, body, when body is sick, or pain arise somewhere, then you attend it as impermanent. You contemplate it as impermanent, you contemplate it as suffering. Okay? This is regarding the body. And the feeling. When a feeling, pleasant feeling arises, when you eat something, let's say something, some food you like, then there's a pleasant feeling. So feeling aggregate, then you contemplate it as pleasant feeling as impermanent, as suffering. Why is suffering? Because it changed. When you're overeating, the pleasant feeling changed to unpleasant feeling. So it changed. And it's not a self. So you attend it as impermanent, suffering, and non-self. Similarly, the consciousness. Consciousness aggregate. When eye consciousness sees something, ear consciousness hears something, it is not permanent. Right? When it sees, then after that, the object disappear, then no more eye consciousness and change to ear consciousness. And the sound stop, then no more ear consciousness. So you attend to it as impermanent, as cause and effect, as suffering. In this case, suffering is not so clear, but you can contemplate it as non-self because it's produced by cause and effect. When the sound disappear, ear consciousness disappear. Therefore, it's not a self. It's a cause and effect relationship. This way, you attend to five aggregate as impermanent, suffering, non-self, as fearful, and so on. Is clear? Still not clear.
Thank you. Okay, when we are mindful, when we say that, okay, I'm suffering, so I say, okay, this suffering, I must be impermanent, so now I feel better. Yep. But in our daily life, sometimes it's very neutral feeling. You know, if I'm hungry, I go and eat. So, okay, this bowl of noodles is present, nice. So I eat it, I enjoy it. At that moment, I don't need to think about, I will cling to it, you know, my tanha is arising. It's just a neutral feeling. It's quite good taste, you know, just part of life.
You do not observe clearly.
So do you we have to
see,
do that?
You see, you don't even know craving has arisen. The moment the taste touched to the tongue, there's pleasant feeling. When there's pleasant feeling, there's craving. But because our mind is not so sharp enough to see that, so we think we have no craving. We just take the food, enjoy the food. Just now you say enjoy. How can enjoy without craving? It's not possible. Unless your mind is so, when you come to retreat, your mind is so concentrated and your mindfulness is so sharp, then you will see. The moment the food touched the tongue, there's craving already. But now the mind is so restless, cannot see clearly. You don't even know craving has arisen.
Okay, so in our daily life, okay, I go for lunch. I say, okay, I like to eat this noodle, and I don't like this that type. I shouldn't just go for bad food so that I would, you know, stop craving for good food, right? I mean, how do we handle this situation? We will have craving if we enjoy the food. So I know that if I go to buy that particular food, I will enjoy it. That one, I don't like that much. So
you
choose the lousy one.
So you choose the one you like, right?
Yeah, right.
When you choose the one you like, that when you eat it, then the craving will arise again and again. Because you do not contemplate it wisely, because you do not contemplate the pleasant feeling as impermanent. But then you may, why should we contemplate? Because the food we take, the food is to sustain us so that we can live long. But most of the time we eat food, we eat more than enough. Right? Mm. Otherwise obesity is not the problem already. We eat more than enough. Mm. This is the sign of craving, which caused the burden for the body, which caused so much sickness. High cholesterol, high blood pressure, and diabetes all mostly come from overeating food and eat. Only choose the food you like. So this causes a lot of problem. And based on what? Based on craving. We don't even know that. We don't even know that because of craving that caused so much problem for us. Right? Therefore, you have to be mindful of what you are eating. And if there's pleasant feeling arise, contemplate it as impermanent, so that you are not overeating. Okay?
So we don't have to choose lousy food.
You choose healthy food.
All right.
There's a man who...
I have one question. In the normal daily life, problem always says could not become mindful.
Yeah.
Do you have any easy tactic so that?
What's the question? Do I have what shortcut?
No. I mean, easier. I mean, sort of user-friendly tactic that how to improve?
How to improve the mindfulness?
Yeah, in normal time. Mm. Of course, during retreat it's different.
Mm. Yeah,
but always something happen. Mm. Such a like a split of second.
Yeah.
Cannot control.
Yeah.
See, like it, or see, get angry.
Maybe.
Okay. Okay. I think the daily sitting is also very important. Many people out of retreat, when come back home, they still maintain the momentum. Okay, one day 2 hours, one day 2 hours, 1 week pass, one day 1 hour, another second week pass, one day 30 minutes, another week pass, no time to sit already. So they start to lose the momentum. When you lose the momentum in your daily practice, sitting 2 hours per day or 1 hour per day, then you also lose your mindfulness. Plus, when you go out to work, everything is moving so fast, then you lose even faster your mindfulness. Therefore, to maintain, to keep the momentum of your mindfulness, you have to sit every day, at least 1 hour, the best 2 hours. At least 1 hour a day to maintain your mindfulness, your concentration. Concentration also helps mindfulness. Because mindfulness needs also clarity of the mind. If not, the mind is muddled. So if you can sit concentration, let's say practice concentration 1 hour a day, or practice mindfulness, how to practice mindfulness, you can keep your attention on the body and with whatever arises in the body, whether physically or mentally. For example, mentally arise some restlessness, planning, then you know, quickly note it, mindful of it, then contemplate impermanent. Or whatever arises in the body, you quickly mindful of it, then later on, after mindfulness, then you apply wisdom, contemplate it as impermanent. So if you can practice at least 1 hour a day, then it becomes some habit. It's a small habit, then you start to cultivate that habit to be aware of whatever arises in the mind and body. So then when you are moving around, since you have practiced, especially in the morning already, then you have that habit. So when you are moving around, you still have that habit to be aware of whatever arises in the mind and body, although not as fast as when you are doing your sitting meditation. So this is the way you can sharpen a little bit your mindfulness, make your mind clearer. So if you don't sit at all and you hope, I want to be mindful only in a daily life, no sitting at all, no sitting 1 hour or 2 hours in a formal meditation, I don't think you can do it. I don't think you can do it. Okay? So we still have to put effort to sit formally 1 or 2 hours in order to cultivate intense mindfulness, concentration and wisdom. Then use that intense mindfulness, concentration and wisdom we can apply in our daily life.
Yes, there's a question.
Sally, I have a question in my mind. If let's say we want to learn Dhamma, and we want to learn more and more and more. And
learn what?
Dhamma or meditation. Dhamma, we want different type of meditation. And we want to learn, we want to know more and more. Does it classify as wholesome craving?
It's called wholesome desire. Wholesome and craving is two different things, cannot combine together. It's wholesome desire. That is called Dhamma Chanda. Dhamma Chanda. Because desire can be classified as wholesome and unwholesome. But craving cannot be classified as unwholesome, as wholesome. So we only can say wholesome desire. Dhamma Chanda.
Okay. Then another thing is, if let's say we cannot get liberated this life, we need next life to be reborn as a human being in order to practice. Then in the next life, if we the five aggregates, birth, then proceed to suffering, everything. But we need to be reborn as human being, then we can practice. So, craving to be reborn as a human being, isn't that correct?
Then, even Dewa also can practice. Many Dewas also, they practice the Dhamma. Of course, human being also, if you pray, because this life you cannot attain any liberation, then whenever you do good deeds, then you pray, make aspiration. May I reborn as human being so that I can practice the Dhamma. That is okay. Don't pray, may I become human being to enjoy sensual pleasures. That is another thing. That's called craving for sensual pleasures, but not on the Dhamma, not aim to achieve the Dhamma.
Okay, thank you.
So there are no further questions. So thank you to Sally again for a very good... there's one question. Thank you. This question is in Chinese, so I try to translate this. 请问昏沉调举的过失? Thank you. So the question is, what are the faults in drowsiness and restlessness?
The fault in drowsiness is never achieve anything. What is the fault? Especially you are the practitioner. Let's say you come for a retreat. You are always drowsy. How are you going to achieve concentration? How are you going to achieve mindfulness and wisdom? So this is the greatest fault. Or while listening to the Dhamma, you are drowsy. You come here for 2 hours, go back with nothing. You gain nothing because your mind is obsessed by drowsiness. Therefore, drowsiness is one of the 5 hindrances that block the development of concentration and wisdom. Restlessness as well, same. When you listen to the Dhamma talk, your mind is not in the Dhamma talk, but think of your family, your business, how to earn more money. Then after, when you leave the Dhamma hall, people ask you, what is this Sari Susila talking about? I don't know. I don't know. My mind just think of how to earn more money. So you gain nothing. So how the wisdom will grow? Similarly, you come to retreat. If you cannot control your mind, then just thinking here and there, then you cannot gain anything. Cannot gain concentration. When you cannot gain concentration, you will not appreciate meditation. You will not value meditation. Therefore, I think these two are called 5 hindrances. 2 of the 5 that must be done away in order to make progress in concentration, mindfulness, and wisdom. Even in your worldly life, in your worldly life, if you want to achieve your mundane achievement in your business, profession, and so on, if you are always lazy and restless, how are you going to perform your job, right? So the fault is so easily, you can see easily the fault of restlessness and drowsiness. Okay? I should answer in Chinese, but I forget.
Okay, thank you.
I think this should be the last question.
Okay, so this is the last question. If going to retreat helps to reduce 5 aggregates drastically, does it mean that we will definitely gain enlightenment?
Say it again.
If going to retreat helps to reduce the 5 aggregates drastically, does it mean we will definitely gain enlightenment?
To reduce 5 aggregates. How to reduce 5 aggregates? If going to retreat helps to reduce the attachment to 5 aggregates. You cannot say to reduce 5 aggregates. 5 aggregates are there already. How to reduce? You take out one feeling, take out one consciousness, so become 3 aggregates. No such thing. So If going to retreat helps to reduce attachment or craving for five aggregate, then that's correct. Huh? Then does it mean that we confirm?
Yeah.
Does it mean that we confirm gain enlightenment? If it's so easy, I think everybody also want to go tomorrow. Everybody want to go tomorrow. No confirmation. I cannot give you assurance or confirmation. It depends on so many factors. It depends on, first, your own effort. Second, your understanding of the Dhamma. Is it matured or not? If your understanding of the Dhamma is not matured, then your meditation also will not lead you to enlightenment. Huh? The matured of wisdom is also very important. Then, do you meet with the correct teacher? That correct teacher is also very important. And also your own parami. To become enlightened, parami is also one of the important factors. So there are so many factors. All these factors, if come together, maybe we can get some insurance. Otherwise, no. No one can say that come for retreat, you can get enlightenment. If it's so, I think the whole world were full of noble person, Arya already. Okay, but don't be discouraged. You come for retreat, I'm sure the concentration, mindfulness and wisdom will grow, but may not grow to the stage that will lead you to enlightenment. But you are on the path. On the path. As long as you come for retreat, you are on the path to enlightenment. But when you will reach the goal, that it depends on so many factors. Okay? The effort is the most important. Balancing the five controlling faculties are most important. Not only the effort. Balancing the five controlling faculties is the most important for realizing the enlightenment. Okay?
Okay, thank you, Xiaolie, for the Dhamma talk. Yes, may we put our hands together and say sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And may we invite Xiaolie to lead us to share the merits and dedicate the merits.
Eta vata cha ammehi sampadam punya sampadam sabbe deva sabbe buddha sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya akasata cha bhummata devanaga mahidika punyatang anumoditva jirang rakkantu sasanam jirang rakkantu desanam jirang rakkantu mangparang idang me
idang me
punyang
punyang
nibbanasa
nibbanasa
paccayo
paccayo
hodu
hodu
sadu sadu sadu, sadu.